Dirt and Spray continues.
So your wife tells you something. I need to know, where are we going with this?
Andy Dirt Johnson.
She said, you know what I think we should contemplate buying? She wants to put our kid on a leash.
Brandon Sprague.
It's like seeing a tiger in a zoo. You just feel awful for it.
More Dirt and Sprague.
Look, she's an unbelievable mom. She carries all the weight in our family. I have to preface all this because she says I only throw her under the bus on the air.
So you just threw her under the
bus. On the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number two. Endurance break here. 105.1 The Fan of the Fan Sports Network. 7 a.m. on the dot there, buddy.
Look at you.
Here we go, man. Here we go.
Suck it, brand man.
Back
new year,
like
new
we
us.
Never left, baby. One of your resolutions, be on the clock more?
Yeah, it's a goal. I'm tired of hearing about it.
All right.
It's annoying.
Let's see what we can do.
Half the time I want to murder my producer. The other time.
Yeah, he's so loud. We got to get a fix for that talk back, because that talk back is just...
It's not his fault, actually.
No, it's not his fault. He's
something
talking soft.
This, headphone has just blown up or something.
My buzzing sound's gone, though. Nobody responded to my email, but it doesn't buzz anymore. So, you know, maybe somebody fixed it over the weekend. Shout out to Joe Fisher, I guess.
New year, no response on emails. Same things carry over, huh?
Well, to be fair, I don't ever read my emails either, so I can't really criticize anybody for not reading their emails.
You know, that's a very fair point.
You know?
I had a whole goal of, like, deleting my inbox from 27,000, and I didn't do it.
That's going to take so long. You got to go to, like, a tech guy. Can you just scrub this entire thing for me?
I'm terrified, but I also just want to hit delete all and not even go through it.
Yeah, there's stuff in there that I probably need.
But there's probably something in there that I missed that it's like, oh, I should respond to that. Resolutions off to a good start here on the 5th?
I have no resolutions this year, so yeah,
I'm doing
great. I'm not a big resolution guy.
Most resolutions, I saw a study that says it's over by...
That's why I don't do resolutions.
January 8th or January 10th, I think.
Like, if I want to be a better person or get in shape, I'll just get in shape. I don't need
But not be a better person?
Nah, I'm probably not going to do that. You know, I'm kind of stuck in my ways at this point.
Oh, okay.
I did learn over the weekend. God, potty training, what a weekend. I do need to start watching... my cussing. We've officially reached that point.
Did he repeat a word?
Not a bad cuss word, but I think I said a dang it or something like that. And he
dang it's not a cuss word.
I know it's not, but it was the first time that I had said something that he had heard, and then he repeated it, and I cuss quite often.
Oh,
and so it's now like, oh, that's the first time it had been responded back to me.
Yeah,
and now I'm worried about using cuss words. So maybe that's a New Year's resolution, to stop cussing in front of my kid.
My 9-year-old was doing the copy me and mom thing, you know.
Oh yeah, the miming you.
And so eventually I said, oh, you piece of and she went, oh. And she just stared at me.
Say it. I dare you.
Say it. I dare you to say it.
I'm still in charge here. Look at me. Who's the captain now?
She's not even going to school today, by the way. Their
what?
School is off today.
What the hell?
I have no idea.
Why have they been off for a month?
Why do they need the Monday off?
We're going to get snow this month, too. They're going to get a week off for a snowstorm.
I thought everybody was back.
Everybody is back, except my kids' elementary school.
God, kids today are so soft.
It's like, you need to get ready to go to bed. You got to read a book. I don't have school tomorrow.
What?
Excuse me?
What?
Huh?
It's Monday.
What are you going to do all day?
Get out of here.
Jesus.
Move out already. All right. We have a lot to get to here in the second hour of the program. Adam Rittenberg will join us at 7:30. But let's kick off the second hour. We've talked a lot of NFL, a little college football there at the end there, but mostly NFL today. Boy, what the Seattle Seahawks did Saturday night. That was I can't remember who I was texting, because I text a few people in my life when the Niner games are happening. That halftime score was exactly the same feel as Texas Tech Oregon to me.
That game was almost identical.
I felt like a Red Raider fan. I'm like, well, this game's over.
We don't have any hope, but somehow it's still a one possession game. They miss a field goal, and you're like, wait a minute, you put a drive together, and then you turn the ball over inside the 5-yard line, and if you don't do that, it's a 13-10 game with, 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter?
That was devastating, because they had no right to be in that game.
No. Seattle was the better team from start to finish.
Dominated.
Opening drive on.
Like, here's the flowers. There's two bouquets for you. You absolutely dominated. However, I will say, when I turned that game on, because I wasn't on social media, and I saw Trent Williams in a sweatsuit and Ricky Pearsall. Oh, shocking. Ricky Pearsall can't play because he's banged up. I mean, talk about a great talent who is just like every other week, he's out.
Yeah.
If he plays against Philadelphia, which I believe he's on track, according to Shanahan, him and Trent Williams would have played if that game was Sunday, not Saturday. If he plays against Philadelphia and they somehow win that game, he will not play the divisional round.
Mark it
Book
down
that
now.
Right now.
He will not be in the lineup.
But when I saw they were out, I went, oh, God. But then I watched it unfold, and I'm like, oh, God. And just domination. And look, I know a lot. There's been articles about Darnold. We can get to that if you want. But that defense was flying. They were loud. Yeah. And I will say for the first time, because I've pushed back on it, that felt, as shorthanded as Niners were, I felt like I was rewatching the Legion of Boom. They were hitting hard. Mm-hmm. They were being loud. They just had the energy. Like
it, talking ass after every play,
yeah,
it felt like.
That was, for me, the first game this year, and maybe I'm just way late to the party because Seahawks fan will tell me I am.
Sure.
Where I was like, ah, crap, dude. They do look like the Legion of Boom right now.
Well, it's one thing to do it against bad teams. It's another to do it against a 49ers offense who, albeit banged up, came into that game rolling as good as anybody offensively. Like, look at the Niners over the last month offensively. They went on the road to Indy and lit them up. They lit up the Bears. They were playing at a very high level. Purdy's numbers over the last month had been incredible. Now, again, you got to be fair here and say, well, their best offensive lineman and probably their number one wide receiver were not in the game, and that's going to impact
tough,
things a
yeah.
little bit. But injuries are there for everybody. Right, this time of year. It's funny because I think that would leave me far more confident if I'm a Seattle fan, because the last big win that Seattle had that we talked about was their comeback win against the Rams on Thursday night. And that was a great comeback. You get the punt return, the reverse on the next drive, and you're like, oh my God, Seattle's going to find a way to do this. The wonky two-point conversion. The main talking point in that game for a lot of people was Sam Darnold and his ability to play in big games. One of the bigger takeaways for me in that game was how their defense got lit up like a Christmas tree in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rams and Stafford were doing whatever they wanted, whenever they wanted, and just moving up and down the field. Even when they didn't have points on the board, they were getting stopped on fourth down. They were still driving the ball consistently. And then all of a sudden, late in the game, Seattle found a way to tighten the screws, and the Rams couldn't get a damn first down, and that helped lead to the comeback. But I view Seattle through the prism of they're going to go as far as their defense will carry them. I don't have a lot of faith yet in Darnold. I'm a Darnold guy, but there's a bit of a, like, you got to show it in a big moment. And he was fine on Saturday night. Wasn't perfect. Had a couple of nice balls, but they had some moments where they were stubbing their toe offensively, missed a field goal.
He didn't need to do a whole lot.
No, because they only
the
gave up 3 points. Yeah. So you only had to score 7 to win. You only had to score 4 to win, but I have a hard time getting to 4. They're going to go. I view them very similarly, both number one seeds, that is. They're led by their defense, and they, as long as their defense is elite, they will have a chance to win in every game. And so that's why the Rams game was a bit of a red flag for me, and I'm sure Seattle fan will say, well, a couple of guys were out, and that might be true. I don't follow injury reports week in and week out for every team, but that was the biggest thing out of the game. It wasn't about Darnold getting a win in a big game. It was about, holy crap, the Niners were steamrolling everybody offensively, and you just went in there and held them. I think it's the first time they've been held to 3 points under Shanahan since his first ever game as head coach, held them off the board of a touchdown, like, just a dominant performance by that defense.
And it's what drove me crazy was the fact that San Francisco I think when they got near the goal line was their first drive the whole game of breaking the Seattle the Seattle 30. Like,
because the field goal they were outside that at the end of the first half.
It was a dominant performance by that group, and you are a dropped Christian McCaffrey pass away from making that a 3-point game with like 8 and some change, and you're like, oh my God.
That's why the Oregon-Texas Tech example is perfect, because Oregon dominated every aspect of that game, and then you look up and it's 13-0, and they have the ball on the 10-yard line, 3rd and goal. And if you score there instead of throwing a pick, all of a sudden it's a one-possession game, and you're going, ooh, this is a little uncomfortable now, and that would have happened, but a little bit behind, McCaffrey tips it up, incredible bounce, but Seattle took advantage of it.
I mean, I tend to agree with almost everything you said about Sam Darnold. Like, his numbers are fine. He wasn't bad, and I also, his completion percentage was good. I didn't think he was, like, stellar, but he made the throws when he needed to be fair.
He didn't do anything stupid.
Well, he almost did out of his own, like, he didn't mean to be stepped on, right? But that handoff, I mean, there's pivotal play after pivotal play in that game. It's just like one swing and turn of momentum.
Yeah.
And you do ask yourself, and I probably say that a little biasly, but like that handoff to Charbonnet, it's clearly fumbled.
Yeah. Very easily could have been recovered.
And the D-lineman, like, falls on it, and it just bounces off of him. And what happens? Well, okay, and then it's 3rd and 17.
And you give up a run.
And they just are saying, we're going to punt. Here's a toss. 19 yards. That was it. When they made that first down, I said, that's game. They're not winning this game. There's no chance.
There's a stat floating around that there's only been 4 runs on 3rd down all year in the NFL, 3rd and 15 or longer.
They have 2 of them.
And I think they have all of them. I thought I saw the stat where there was like, they had like all 4 of them. It was like, whoa, okay.
Right, because they had one against the Rams. They got booed when they handed that off. They got the first down. And then that, they were ready to punt, and the Niners just give it up. But there's an article by Mike Silver on The Athletic where it's like all about Darnold. And it's,
That's what we do in the NFL. It's quarterbacks.
You know what? It is. But also, like, we have eyeballs. We watched it. Darnold was fine. They ran the ball, and their defense was awesome.
That's how they're going to win in the playoffs.
And thank you. And it's not that Darnold won't throw a touchdown pass or he won't have a good game, but it's like, if they're to get to the Super Bowl and go back to Santa Clara, it's going to be because they ran the football and their defense could not be scored on or moved the ball on.
I view them, I'll make the comparison for Thursday night's game in the semifinal. Like, you just can't lose the game if you're Sam Darnold. And the first Rams game, he throws four picks. God. Then you get the Rams at home. What happens? He throws a pick six and a critical, or I don't think it was technically a pick six. They might have tackled
got to like
the
1 yard
and
line.
And then they ran it in. So essentially a pick
through
six.
Through a goal line interception.
Through a goal line. Like, there's just, look, you can't do that. As long as you don't do that, your defense is good enough to win you almost any game because that's how good they are on that side of the ball. And so that's the way I view Carson Beck on Thursday night. Like, just don't come out and throw three picks and you're probably going to win because you're the better team and your defense is really good. You just, this is where sometimes using the phrase game manager, people view dirty, you know, it's a negative connotation. That's not the case for me. Like, you're in a great spot, Sam Darnold. You have waited your entire career to be on a roster that's built like this, where you don't have to be the guy. You're not the savior. Just go out and manage the game. Don't turn it over. Pick up a key first down here or there, and you're going to find a way to be in every single ball game. The other thing that they have going for them is history. The stat floating around this weekend blew me away, and then when I look at it, I'm like, yeah, that, I guess that makes sense when I remember the years that they've been good. Every time Seattle's ever been the number one seed in the NFC, they have gone to the Super Bowl. It's only the fourth time
it's
happened.
It's not a whole lot of times.
It's only the fourth time it happened. Well, they only have been in three Super Bowls, and every time they've gone, they've been the number one seed. 2005, lost to the Steelers. 13, they won. Mm-hmm. 14, they went back. All three of those years, they were the one seed, and now here they are as the one seed again.
Where are you guys today? After watching that game, and I think there's truths on both sides. Lights out, defensive performance, great run blocking, and Darnold was good. And then I think there is, the Niners had no left tackle. You could clearly tell the pass rush was there all night.
Oh, yeah, Purdy got beat up.
You didn't have Pearsall. Obviously, McCaffrey was zeroed in on for the Seahawks defense. Hey, we take him away, who's going to beat us?
Yeah.
Jawan Jennings?
Yeah, he had one nice play here there.
And look, I love me some George Kittle. George Kittle, if you go look at, like, some of their bigger games, go look at his last Super Bowl. I like George Kittle, but he has some big game. Where you at, guy?
Come on, George.
Are you guys in the, they are the favorite for you in the NFC?
I still can't do it because there's something about the Rams. The Rams, to me, are still the favorite in the NFC. And
despite all of what you've seen with the Rams.
Despite all of it.
Are they second behind the Rams?
They are number two behind the Rams. Yeah. There's not a high trust factor for Chicago, and I think they put that on display this weekend.
Yeah, for sure.
Philadelphia's offense has been not, I mean,
I don't think you trust Green Bay either.
I don't trust Green Bay.
San Francisco.
If they find a way to win and you get Fred Warner back, I think it changes the equation a little bit.
And he's telling teammates he might be able to come back for the divisional round.
He's one of the best players in all of football, and probably the best linebacker in all football, so that changes their defense a little bit. So maybe the thought process is different there. Carolina, get the hell out of here. They don't belong in the dance anyway. So to me, it would go LA 1, Seattle 2, but that might be disrespectful to Seattle because they're going to have home field advantage the rest of the way now.
Yeah, I know a lot of people are not believers in him as a Super Bowl winning quarterback.
It'd be wild if Sam Darnold won a Super Bowl this year.
Well,
be wild if we Seattle really won the Super Bowl.
You could really just go, well, yeah, but also, like, we knew they'd be good.
I don't think we had this. Here's what I will say.
I'm have them as the one seed.
I certainly don't root for anything Seattle-related.
Sure.
I'm anti-Seattle in every way, shape, or form. That's the way I've been my entire life.
We're always anti-little brother city unless it comes to the pro teams, and then we're Mariner fans and Seahawks fans. I find it an odd thing.
Yeah, and I don't like being a little brother, and I'm jealous of them, and I want everything that they have, and that's where my anger and my hatred comes out of it. But where I will give them a ton of flowers is they went into a division this year where I know San Francisco had a down year, but they're a known commodity. Mm-hmm. The Rams have been a known commodity and they just won a title. Arizona sucks. We don't need to talk about them. When they made their choice at quarterback, they were mocked and ridiculed by the majority of the NFL world.
Well, even some of their fans were like,
Geno, what? It's the same thing. And look, it is. They're not here because of Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold has certainly played well, and he's had a decent season, but that's not the primary reason they're there. But it hasn't been this disastrous offseason. How do you move off from Geno Smith? It turned out to be a great move for them, and they stockpiled defensive talent. And they largely built a roster that's kind of similar to what they had the last time they went on a run. I don't think this defense is the lead Legion of Boom, but I think they're very talented. And so they said, let's build that, find a way to run the football, get a little bit better on the offensive line, and then a quarterback that could go out there and manage the game for us. And that's exactly what Russ was early in his career. So their front office was criticizing the offseason, and they deserve a ton of flowers for the years that they've had.
Oh, they built their offensive line back up. They gave Cross the
Zabel's
contract.
Zabel's been good. The draft
Zabel's
pick,
been yep. good. The running backs, they have two running backs that you
And they
you
didn't
trust.
Have Cross in this game, too. I don't know what
no,
his,
he was injured. He
his
was
time
out.
Frame is, so you got a bye week now to get him healthy.
Obviously, JSN is in the conversation yes. of the best receiver in the entire sport. What's funny about what you just highlighted there, like how they got here, he has certainly had some good moments, right? I don't want this to be an anti-Darnold thing because he just had an efficient game and they just got the one seed.
Mm-hmm.
Only three less interceptions than Geno this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Geno, Tua, and Sam Darnold have the most interceptions of all the quarterbacks with starts.
That's quite a few. That's so, quite a few. And four of them came in one game. One bad game.
Yeah. But I think that speaks to the defense, right? That speaks to what
they still
are.
Had a chance to win that game when he threw four picks.
Yes, they
that
did.
That sums up who they are.
They are field goal attempt away from potentially winning that game outright. So the Seahawks wrap up the number one seed. They win the division. They beat San Francisco. They thumped San Francisco on Saturday night. We'll talk with Adam Rittenberg. We'll dive into some college football coming up at 7:30 and get his thoughts on the Oregon-Indiana Peach Bowl and also the Miami Ole Miss games. So we'll talk with Adam Rittenberg here in the second hour at 7:30. Dirt and Sprague, we're back with more on 105.1 The Fan. We'll talk with Adam Rittenberg at 7:30. We'll break into some college football. I don't know if Dirt has on the old show sheet the red-hot Portland Trailblazers.
Red hot and rolling, baby.
Oh,
break
buddy.
Them up. Here they come.
4-1.
Two last notes on the Seahawks that I forgot. One, they did my guy John Schneider dirty.
What do you mean? Oh, the armpit?
Dude, as somebody who sweats a lot, I felt bad for him in that moment because that's me in every public place I ever
go
to.
Are they supposed to time when he's going to raise both arms
give
and
me
high
a heads
five?
Up? Let me know. That was a bit swampy there, John.
Yeah, that was
you know,
dude, don't wear a shirt like that if that's how you roll.
I think
you,
maybe that's just how you roll in anything
you
wear.
Some better deodorant.
As somebody who sweats a lot, the deodorant does not matter
not
in the clothes.
You got to get antiperspirant. You got to get something.
Antiperspirant does not matter, okay? From a pitter over here, let me tell you, the deodorant change does nothing for it.
I tend to agree with that.
Neither does the shirt choice. I could be in a cutoff t-shirt and I'm pitting out, and it's not about a sweat thing. It's just you just sweat a lot in your pit. So I feel bad for John Schneider there. The other historical thing that a listener reminded me of, so not only every time they've been the number one seed, they made the Super Bowl, every time a new pope has been
crowned,
popified, whatever, crowned, they've gone to the, every year that that's happened, they've gone to the Super Bowl. 2005, it was John, was it John Paul? Was that John Paul? Whatever, yeah. And then the last guy.
John Paul.
13, 14, you know, you get my point.
Jim, Bob, Steve.
And now
you know.
We got our cool Chicago Pope, and he happened to be, happened this season.
Not cool at all, I'll tell you that much.
There you go.
We'll talk with Rittenberg coming up. So, in the AFC, right, we have a lot to get to this week in the NFL, the playoff matchups. Sean Payton became the third coach ever to win the one seed in both the NFC and the AFC.
Yeah, I guessed one of the other coaches quickly.
You did.
And the other one I would not have guessed.
Yeah, so they showed the graphic because we saw one of these ESPN, can you stump Rex Ryan? And I'm like, oh, I saw this graphic, so I knew the answer.
Just put a picture of a foot up there.
I don't think that would stump him. I think.
I mean,
that
he wouldn't think about the trivia question.
He'd start drooling.
If you put a foot up there, he probably wouldn't get the answer right.
All right. The answer is Tom Coughlin was the first to do it.
Yeah, I would have totally forgot about the Jags year early on.
Yeah. Which, by the way, we need to have a conversation on the Jags. You talk about, are you buying the Seahawks as the favorite?
The Jags are a wagon, dude.
They are a
wagon. Wagon right now.
And they've leaned back into their old unis, and I'm like, dude, how do you not pick them if they're going to wear this?
I
got rid of the old one or the new one.
Tell you, shocked that that game against Buffalo is the 10 a.m. game on Sunday.
Me too.
I would have thought they would have flipped the Patriots Chargers.
That'd be my Monday night game.
Yeah, you could do that, or have that be the 10 a.m. game, and then have the Jags and the Bills be the Sunday night game.
It either needs to be Sunday night or Monday night. Whoever made that schedule, I think, dropped the ball.
Arguably the hottest team in the NFL against a quarterback who finally has the big boulder out of the way that has always stood in his way of getting to a Super
Bowl.
Like,
Pittsburgh and Houston is your Monday night?
That's got to be ugly. You know that's got to be ugly.
We'll go through the schedule. Yeah. We'll go through all of it. Denver is the one seed.
Mm-hmm.
They get that win against the Chargers and Trey Lance. I saw the stat. The Chargers sat 11 players in that game.
They didn't play anybody. And I'm glad that they didn't.
Yeah.
Look, I said this last week.
They could have been the six, but, you know, is there a difference for you playing Jacksonville or New
England?
There is.
This is going to sound really dumb to a lot of people.
You'd rather play New England.
I would rather play New England. Because the only reason is, I'm not saying that New England is worse than Jacksonville's a wagon. New England's been great all
you
year.
You think Jacksonville's
have
better than New England? I just think
there's one thing that's going to eliminate the Chargers, what is it? It's a dominant pass rush. Mm-hmm. It's guys up front who can just beat up on their one of the worst offensive lines in the last 30 years in the NFL. And by the way, literally every stat metric points to that.
Right.
Jacksonville has the ability to do that. New England is a very good team and a very sound team.
But they beat up on women, allegedly.
That they do. Or chefs, some people would say.
Well, I was a lady chef.
Yeah, that it was. They're not known for their not the feature of the team. Like, I wanted nothing. If I'm a Charger fan, I want nothing to do with Houston. And I know they damn near won that game, but I want nothing to do with that pass rush again. Jacksonville just ripped them apart at the line of scrimmage when they went on the road a couple of weeks ago. So I actually love the Chargers' idea of, like, let's just get the 7 seed. We'll play New England. They've never been here before. We're older. We're more experienced. We're a little more battle-tested. They got a young quarterback. Like, I like that matchup for them.
Very odd to watch both Diggs and the defensive lineman just out there and
playing, baby.
Like, it happened back-to-back. Yeah. Very odd situation.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this for sure. Did Harbaugh say that's the strategy? Because
not that they
won
in New England. No, they just said they want to get guys healthy.
You know what? You might be right in terms of matchup, styles make fights, all that. I thought that was all that was about. That was not we'd rather be the 6 or the 7. I think that was Herbert's hand's broken, and we want nobody else to get hurt in this game.
Yeah, because if your quarterback's not playing, you don't have a chance to win the game anyways with Trey Lance. He was, to be fair to him, Denver's got a good defense, and nobody was playing around him. Dear God, Trey Lance was awful yesterday.
Yeah.
And if Herbert, you don't want to play Herbert because he's got a broken hand and he's been beat to hell the last 2 months. So get him a week off.
Yep.
And if he's not playing, you might as well rest everybody else.
Well, so here you go. You look at it. Bo Nix and Denver are the 1 seed, and maybe they're the runaway favorite for you. New England's the 2. Liam Cohen and Jacksonville are the 3.
Yep.
Pittsburgh wins last night to win their conference or win their division and get the 4. Houston, Buffalo, Chargers. It's interesting to look at that and not say out loud how many people are going to pick the Bills just because they have the 1 quarterback of the group of 4 quarterbacks that we say in this tier stuff versus if you look at the AFC and NFC, Caleb, Jalen Hurts, Bryce Young, Brock Purdy, Jordan Love, Sam Darnold, right? That's not counting Stafford, who might win the MVP.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the AFC, it's Bo Nix, Drake May, Trevor Lawrence, old-ass Aaron Rodgers, CJ Stroud, broken hand Herbert.
Yeah.
People are going to look at the Bills, and maybe they won't, because I think the Jags are an absolute wagon.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough game.
Wait for Friday to see the line on that one, because I think people are going to start betting the Bills.
I bet the over in that game. That's the only play I've made so far.
That's a good bet.
I thought the Bills' defense stinks.
But it's interesting how it's lined up for Josh Allen, where this isn't his best team. But some of those other quarterbacks that have traditionally been in your way, they're not there now.
Nope. This is the first time. This blew me away, and I love that Cincinnati gets included in this because they're only one of these. This is the first time since 2018 in the AFC that the quarterback that wins the conference will not be Joe Burrow or Patrick Mahomes.
God, it's now, 2026.
Again, Burrow is only one of those, so that's mainly a Patrick
Bills
Mahomes stat.
Bills are a one-point favorite.
Yeah, a slight favorite on the road.
Give me the Jags.
I think you have three road favorites right this weekend?
I'm done questioning the Jags, dude.
You have. I mean, you just have to. They've been awesome. They're a well-rounded team. There's not a lot of weaknesses there. The addition of a wide receiver at the deadline has improved their offense tremendously. Like, that's a brutal game to open with for Buffalo. But if they can win it, I think if they go on the road and win in Jacksonville this weekend, and Allen looks great, and they find defensively maybe they're decent, I think then you look at Buffalo a little bit more of the rest of the way of like, all right, now I got unproven the rest of the way, and you got a chance to go on a run here. There's a lot of pressure on Buffalo going into this playoffs because there's no Mahomes standing in your way.
We'll get to the matchups, the TV schedule, all of that, but let's pause the NFL conversation and talk some college football. We got a Peach Bowl on Friday, Oregon, Indiana, and we got Ole Miss in Miami on Thursday. Adam Rittenberg of ESPN will join us coming up next. Nice little Monday show here. A lot of NFL conversation, but we've got college football playoff games on Thursday and Friday.
Shout out the Hoggies.
Shout out the Hoggies. We'll see if the Hoggies can step up for what?
Good go. He said he's got to keep it tight. He's got going on.
Well, he said something as I was talking.
Let's go. Hurry up offense. Right, No huddle.
Adam Rittenberg, ESPN, the great, the wonderful, the delightful. Adam Rittenberg joining us here. Peach Bowl, a rematch, Indiana-Oregon. Does it still blow your mind the way it's blown ours that Indiana football is the number one overall seed in college football and that they're the favorite to win the national championship?
Yeah,
you know, it's less surprising as it goes along, but certainly to see what they did to Alabama, to beat them at the line of scrimmage and to be so definitive, it continues to impress. They don't really have an obvious weakness if you look at them statistically, but it's hard not to, kind of doubt them until you see them on the field. And, you know, they don't miss tackles. They don't make a lot of mistakes. They force mistakes. I love how committed they are to the run, even when it's not, you know, always hitting on big plays. And so that puts them in advantageous down and distance situations. It doesn't put their quarterback in a tough situation. And so, I think they're beatable, but you have to be great at the line of scrimmage. You got to run the ball. You've got to create some mistakes on their end. And, you know, it was very clear that Alabama was not up to that task in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, and Alabama had been kind of a sinking ship over the last 2 months of the year. And, maybe we overreacted a little bit too much to their comeback win over Oklahoma. I'm curious to ask you about Oregon's chances to do it, Adam. They've had chances, you know, at a rematch game the last 2 years. One, they lost the first one, and everybody thought, it's tough to beat a team the second time. Then they lost again the second time to Washington. And then they beat Ohio State last year in the regular season, and you get the rematch against them in the Rose Bowl, and we know that didn't go very well for them. What do you make of Oregon's chances to end that and find a way to be the first team to beat Indiana this year?
Well, yeah, I certainly like the way that Oregon's playing, and I really commend them, especially when you have two coordinators who've become head coaches in recent weeks, for handling double duty and still game planning. And man, the game plan that Tosh Lupoi put together and that his players executed against Texas Tech was really impressive. And, you know, again, talent wise, you look at recruiting rankings and portal rankings and so forth, you know, you can certainly make the case that Oregon has maybe a talent edge going into this game in terms of future NFL players. But I think the evaluation that Indiana does with its personnel, the number of experienced players, especially on offense, I mean, Oregon's going to have to play its best game. I mean, I look back at the earlier matchup, you know, Oregon gets that pick six and they're tied early in the fourth quarter. They still lose by 10 on their home field, and they didn't score an offensive touchdown for the final 50 minutes. So if it's anything like that, and you're really relying on a pick six to keep you in the game, that's a tough approach if you're the Ducks. So I do think the start of the game is going to be important. I mean, Alabama was actually in the game at the end of the first quarter, and then they just couldn't sustain. They couldn't get anything going offensively. So if Oregon can jump ahead and put Indiana at a disadvantage, possibly leading to another major mistake, that would be the plan to go. I think it's going to be tough for the Ducks to win this if they don't get off to a good start.
Yeah. Adam Rittenberg, ESPN, our guest here on Twitter, at ESPN Rittenberg, has a few pieces up, including a look at this one with Indiana and Oregon in the Peach Bowl. Has Indiana gotten better since they played Oregon, in your mind?
Well, yeah, I think they have. I think along the line of scrimmage, especially, you look at how they finished the season. They've also just been tested. I was at their game, or I watched their game rather at Iowa, and I know Oregon had that same experience to go into Kinnick Stadium and try to get a win against a team that's really tough to create big plays against. I think that's a growing experience for Indiana. You know, how they beat Ohio State, hanging around, and then finding their edge offensively late while their defense played really well. And then you're still facing an Alabama team that's well coached and has a lot of talented individual players. So to be able to do something to them that hasn't been done in 30 plus years about 30 years is really astounding. So I do think that they're an improving team. They haven't had a lot of major injuries other than, unfortunately, Stephen Daly, the defensive lineman, who got hurt celebrating after the Big Ten championship game. So they're relatively healthy. And again, their depth has really jumped out to me. That this is a team that has a lot that can hold up along the line of scrimmage. And then they've had different guys that have been able to help them. I mean, Charlie Becker, he's maybe their best receiver right now. No one was really talking about him a few weeks ago. I mean, he's had several 100-yard receiving games, had the touchdown catch to put them on the board, or at least their first touchdown in the Rose Bowl. So in some ways it's similar that Indiana is not reliant on one running back. Oregon certainly not relying on one running back. Same at receiver. I would certainly give Oregon the edge at tight end with Sadiq, who might be the best tight end in the country. But they are kind of similar teams, line of scrimmage based, really good quarterbacks, and a lot of variety at the running back and receiver spot.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Becker for the year he's had, because I remember when they came to Eugene, I didn't even know he was on the team. And then like 3 weeks later, I'm watching one of the games. I'm like, who the hell is this guy? Where did he come from?
The Penn State game, he had this breakout game.
You're like, has he been there all year? Was he banged up? I'm so confused. I'm curious to ask you, Adam, my team obviously being in this has, you know, there's a lot on the line for me on Friday night of Oregon, Indiana. But even that, I can kind of step out of the bubble and acknowledge how cool this Final Four is. And I'm curious what message it sends. Like, you have Oregon that's never won a national championship, Indiana that's never won a national championship, Miami hasn't been relevant in a quarter century, and Ole Miss, so like, I guess they claim a third of a title from like 70 years ago, but let's be honest, right, they've never really won one either. And so you got a chance for a first time national champion, no real recent blue bloods of the Ohio State, Alabama, Georgias in the world in this Final Four. I'm just curious what message that sends to you about where the sport's at.
Yeah, I think it's diversifying. I mean, I've still been kind of in that old mindset of in most years only a few teams could win the national championship, and I think that's starting to shift a little bit. I still never think it's going to be 10 teams. Maybe it's going to be 7 or 8, but that's certainly better than what it's been. I mean, there's a lot of years we can go back and look where you know maybe only one team could win a national title or two, and that's certainly changed. You know, I didn't think Ole Miss would be able to get this far, especially with the disruption on their coaching staff. You know, we've all been conditioned to, you know, look at Miami as a team that will make mistakes despite its talent level. And that could still happen, but they've gotten to this point and they deserve a lot of credit for that. You know, Indiana, again, this is one of the best, wildest stories in all of sports, in the last, you know, I don't know how many years you can go back. I mean, who would have expected Indiana? You know, Oregon's really the most established team. Oregon has been good for a long time. Oregon played for a national title. Oregon's been on the stage before. But these other three, because of the layoff with Miami, it really is astounding. And, you do wonder because of the portal, and that's certainly a key factor in all of four situations. When you look at the quarterbacks, when you look at some of the depth pieces that they were able to bring in, and then the different coaches and their profiles all connected to Nick Saban, but all a little bit different. It does show that I think we're going to see more years where the pool of teams that can contend for a national title is going to expand, and we're going to see more teams that haven't been on this stage, you know, getting there.
Final one for you, because we know you got to go, and we appreciate your time here on a busy week for you as you get ready for two playoff games. Who do you have in the national championship game? So we're very curious on where you lean with that one, and who's your winner?
Yeah, so I mean, I pick the games right when they come out, the same night, you know, and I had Indiana reaching the national title game. Hard to go against that, although I think Oregon's certainly capable of winning this game, but they're going to have to play their best game of the season. The other one is fascinating. Miami's better along the line of scrimmage. You saw that in the Ohio State win. I think they have more NFL players on their roster. Ole Miss may have actually had a more talented team last year, which is wild to think about. But you look at what Trinidad Chambliss did in that Sugar Bowl, the confidence he's playing with, the playmaking ability, improvisation. I'll probably lean Ole Miss to win that game. So I got Indiana Ole Miss, but it really could end up any of the different possibilities. That's the exciting thing. You don't have – I mean, listen, Indiana, when all is said and done, we may look at them as a less talented version of the LSU team in 2019, that it was just inevitable. But these other teams are certainly capable. And there could be all sorts of outcomes later this week.
And, yeah, we have. I'm assuming you have the psycho Cignetti sitting there celebrating with a natty if he gets there?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I watching them in the Rose Bowl, and I know that's not the best Alabama team we've seen by any means in recent years, it's just hard to look at Indiana and see an area where, well, okay, if you do this, they're going to fall apart. Now, listen, they haven't gotten behind big, and maybe that's the key. If they get behind two scores, we're going to see some cracks in how this Indiana team operates. But I just think they're so sound. They're so experienced. You're learning about how they evaluate personnel. I'm writing about that later this week. Has been really interesting. And the things that Sig prioritizes, maybe over other things that other coaches value. So it's not as much of a surprise when you kind of learn how this roster is built. And I think they're built to finish the job.
All right, there we go. Great stuff. Adam Rittenberg, look for that piece later this week. Enjoy the playoff semis, and thank you so much for hopping on a Monday. We always appreciate having you.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
All right, there we go. Adam Rittenberg, ESPN, on Twitter, @ESPN Rittenberg. You're welcome.
Nobody's giving us a chance.
Nobody's giving you a
chance.
Nobody's
giving us a
chance. I got a guess that I knew would not give you a chance. You're welcome.
I watched Pate last night. He took Indiana to win, took Indiana to cover. Nobody's giving us a chance. Hey, you know what? We're just happy to be here. I mean, I don't even know if we should play the game at this point because it's going to be such a bloodbath. There's no point. They won the first one. Why play the second one? But we're just happy to be included, man. Mm. That's all we're doing.
I see you wearing the Christmas present. How's it fit?
Dude, it's a delightful T-shirt.
Does it wear?
Oh, it's phenomenal. Yeah. It's a great fit. Love it. Love the look.
I like the teddy bears. I'm jealous.
Dancing bears on the elbow. Feels fantastic, man.
Let's do an early look ahead of this one, Indiana and Oregon, because, well, they had a press conference. Was it yesterday?
Take your hands and put it down your pants,
huh? Saturday.
I think it was Saturday.
I watched it last night.
Saturday at 11:30, I believe.
One of those weird
I don't know, but, you know, none of it makes sense right now. Our coordinators aren't even in town yet. Are they back yet? I sure hope so.
Let's talk about this. There could be some aspects of this game that are a little out of the control. Oregon, Indiana, how you're feeling about it today on a Monday, given the game is on Friday. 503-864-6326. We'll discuss it next on The Fan. Loaded third hour of the program today and a fourth hour. Happy New Year. Somebody asking, when do you stop saying Happy New Year? Well, you know, in case people weren't with us on the second on Friday last week, this is our first show back for some. So I'll say it just for today.
I'm not a big Happy New Year guy.
I mean, I don't really do it much.
You say that to, like, your neighbors? Hey, Happy New Year.
I was just coming back from a break, dude. What do you want from me?
I'm a little hangry right now. I made a bagel this morning. It was in my kitchen, cream cheese ready to go, and I left it on the counter.
Yeah, that thing's going to be stale as hell when you get home.
Hopefully the wife tossed it or ate it. She wakes up shortly. Hey, here's your breakfast. I made you breakfast, honey. Look at that. Nice little start to your week, but I got to go get a burrito in the next break.
Well, your big game is on Friday.
That it is, Bob. Very excited.
We don't have a ton of guests this week, but we're lined up with some. We'll maybe hopefully get Don Fisher of Indiana football, and he's a good friend of the program now. I'm curious where you're at today. Like, I know ultimately you're going to end up picking, and you should. You should go down with your team.
Oh, yeah.
I am curious about a couple things. One, the coach angle is fascinating to me. I texted this to you during the Tech game, and we didn't talk about it on the Friday show. It feels like Lanning's doing a little more coaching of the defense. Maybe I'm just reading body language or something.
Well, I'd imagine that some of those roles have to be passed off because they can tell you all you want that they're focused in here.
It's not normal.
But you can't
We know this.
After the game was over, both coordinators immediately flew to Berkeley and Lexington, and they've been recruiting over the weekend, and they'll be back in town and help game plan. But it's not the same as a normal week.
It's just not the reality.
And
any questions you have about offense, give Texas Tech the credit on defense. Like, maybe part of that is, you know, Will Stein's trying to build a program while still coaching a different program.
Very well could be.
It was just portal day. The portal was portaling. We'll get to some of that today. But Indiana's not dealing with that.
No, they're
not. Now, Cignetti did say in the Peach Bowl press conference, we have some audio clips, but he said he had to take a 4-hour break in game prep because it's portal day and they're forced to portal while still having to coach in the semis, which tells you how stupid the schedule is. But
I think he had 13 kids on campus in the transfer portal who were taking their visits.
I'm curious about the coach impact outside of Lanning, and I think it's fair to ask and wonder aloud, has Indiana gotten better since they played Oregon? Because I think you can make a case they have.
Certainly appears that way.
The Penn State game is a point you could say, well, that game, Sprague, they should have lost. Yeah, but they didn't.
Well, nobody's perfect for 13 weeks of a season.
It's hard to be perfect. Yeah. You get it out of some of these. Oregon struggled with Wisconsin last year, right?
And
that was Wisconsin.
And this year. It was 7-0 at halftime.
Yeah. Mother Nature.
I know, but still.
But my point is, like, you're going to have those, and they got through it. I watch Indiana, and I'm like, I think they've gotten better since they played in Eugene. So there's a couple things for me early today that I'm thinking about. The coach impact and how much Indiana's improved since they played at Autzen.
I mean, the coach impact is a massive thing, right? They're going to tell you a million times that, you know, we're here and we're solely focused on this. And the reality is you're not. And that's okay. That's this dumb reality that we have to live in this sport. And Oregon is certainly not the only team that's dealing with it. Ole Miss doesn't even know if half their staff's coming back until 24 hours ago to coach in their next playoff game because I think everybody at LSU thought they were going to lose to Georgia. So sure, go coach in a playoff game, then you're going to lose and you'll all be here. And then they won, and now they're trying to figure that out. So Oregon's not the only team that's having to deal with that. I think the thought of Indiana getting better is a very rational one. They look like a wagon right now. They just beat Alabama by 35 points in the Rose Bowl. Now, I think myself and others included got a little duped by Alabama. Like, the reality of that team in the back half of the year was they were not very good. They were eking out wins over bad teams. They lost to Oklahoma, turning the ball over a ton. They blew a 17-point lead in the Iron Bowl, and Auburn was not very good this year. Mm-hmm. They were down 17-0, and if you don't get the sequence of drop touchdown pass and dropped punt, they probably go on to lose that Oklahoma game. But they used that as a slingshot to get them back in the game, and they win. And I think the way that they won the game in the second half led some of us to think, like, oh, here did Alabama wake up? When in reality, reality, they were the same team they've been for the last 2 months.
Now, the slow start he highlighted, I had a thought on this, and we only had him for a window, so I didn't want to react to it. But, like, you can, I think if you're an Oregon side, you might point to the beginning of that game where it was like pressure and a sack and not quickly scoring. Well, how did the other teams do that had byes? They did largely nothing. And I just wondered if that was the result of Indiana being off for the month.
Very well could be.
And then eventually they got, and I still think they got the better of all the teams because Bama wasn't that great.
And the fourth down call, and then they score, and yeah, it just changed the dynamic of the game.
But I thought they were slow starting, not so much because of what Bama was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was more about their month layoff. They just had the easier opponent of all the other teams. And so I don't know if I put a lot of stock in, well, look what Bama did at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
Whereas, well, Indiana was waking up from a month hibernation.
No doubt. And look, we're going to have all week to talk about a million different angles. I think on Monday where I'm at is I get why people love Indiana to win this game. I understand why everybody's picking them. They just beat Bama by 35. They just beat Ohio State in the Big Ten title game. Like, you go back to them winning at Oregon. And, you know, a lot of people on the Oregon side of this will take flack for it. But the reality is the entire college football world was in unison and looking at Indiana the same way until that game happened. We talked about it that entire week. There's no juice on this game. Why? They're a top 10 team. They're undefeated. It's because we had two data points for Indiana playing elite championship level rosters. And both times it happened under Kurt Cignetti, they got dominated in the game. The Ohio State game and the Notre Dame game. So we all went into that game universally thinking they're a great story. Cignetti's a great coach. I can't believe he's turned Indiana around and they're a top 10 team in the country. But I kind of need to see it to believe it. And then they did it against Oregon on the road at Autzen and won the game by 10. And I think everybody's eyes were open. And all they have done is backed up that performance week after week after week. Like, they beat Ohio State in the Big Ten title game. They beat Alabama by 5 touchdowns in the Rose Bowl. So they deserve the flowers and the credit as the best team in the country. Where I'm at on a Monday is that I think Oregon has the ability to beat them. They just have to do something that they haven't really done a lot of this year, and that is play a good, clean football game. I think Oregon's, you know, hovering around a B or a B plus offensively for a lot of the year. Mm-hmm. And if they can come out and give you an A, they can win the game. I'm a psycho. I went back and rewatched the first game this weekend because I had some time on my hands, and I'm like, I want to remember how I kind of felt, because there's this narrative out there that Oregon got dominated and they lost the game by 10. And I go back and watch, and that is the final score. And I don't disagree with the fact that Indiana was the better team. They certainly were. It's a 10-10 game with 24 seconds left in the first half. You miss a field goal, they hit a 60-yarder.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 20-20 game with 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. They score a touchdown on a 3rd and 10. You then throw a deflected interception on the second play of your next drive. They get the field goal out of that. That's why it was a 10-point game. This idea that Oregon couldn't run the ball or they were dominated just isn't true. They were in that game despite how bad that they played. Now, Indiana might be better, and they're not going to have the home of the help of the home crowd.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be an incredibly tough putt, but I think Oregon has the ability to do it. They just got to put together a game where they're finishing drives inside the red zone, not settling for threes, and they're converting those fourth downs that Dan's going to go for.
Yeah, I should have brought up Dante's numbers from that first match, because I would just say from the dominated angle, I dominated could be such a subjective word, but it wasn't dominated. But to your point of what you said of, like, you just watched it and you're like, Indiana's the better football team today.
Definitely the better team.
And they could certainly prove Friday that they are. And right now their record indicates as much.
Mendoza was 20 of 31 for 215 yards, one touchdown, one pick. And Dante Moore, 21 of 34, 186 yards, one touchdown, two picks.
And that was what I would say is, like, the dominating factor, where however you parse that out, it was to me more about their defense looked like they put him in a mental hell. Like, he hadn't...
Oh, with their coverage designs. He had never seen that before,
He
didn't know
before.
Where to go. He was confused in the pocket. And that was the other thing.
And that's, like, what I wonder going in is, like, that version of the dominated. Can they disguise again and bring blitzes when you don't see them and then drop certain people into coverages, go from one coverage into a different coverage? Like, if they can execute that, I think they can find themselves in a good spot. But everybody keeps saying the whole, it's hard to beat a team twice and all that stuff.
Unless you're Oregon, Washington.
Well, unless you're Oregon, Washington. I don't know if we're going to carry over. We'll have this all week. Obviously, the game's Friday. We have a loaded third hour of the program. More NFL, more college football. The portal's portaling. Loaded third hour. Dirt and Sprague, 105.1, The Fan.